it's episode 426 of the 343 podcast. Today, I have another guest. His name is Paul Spacey, a longtime practitioner as well. I'm not necessarily going to be getting newbies, even though you know what? It'd be interesting to get a newbie coach on here a little bit and pick his brain and have him pick my brain and let's see what happens. But today, it's all about coaching licenses. Paul, as I said, has over a decade, almost two decades, I would imagine, in coaching experience. He just recently took his C license here in the United States. We're going to talk all about that and more. Speaking of soccer coaching licenses, I know many people think that it is all about education. It is not about education. You'll get a flavor of that in this episode. But if you do want coaching education in and of itself, not a license, not some credential, not some sort of diploma or certificate that you can wave around in people's faces trying to get some credibility, but real education, you go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there based on people who have actually done the work, done it for a long time, over two decades here in the American soccer environment, and then unprecedented work, work worthy of remark. But I'll leave it there. Go to 343coaching.com. And parents, you are not technically coaches yourselves, but you are coaching off the field. And for that, you go to 343masterclass.com so you can help better guide and mentor your kid. We have codified our over two decades worth of coaching experience at every single level. All age groups, even including the professional level, we've seen cycle after cycle after cycle, and we've codified all those lessons that are critical for parents to understand and know. That is at 343masterclass.com. And if you happen to be coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode with Paul Spacey. Here we go. That was a good line. You look like Zinedine Zidane.
I wish I was, mate. Give me 10% of his talent, I might have ended up on TV.
Amazing.
Instead of in the Sunday League parks, picking up the dirt where I ended up.
So cool. Look, Paul, let's get right on into it, if you don't mind. I saw that you did your U.S. Soccer C license. Obviously, I have a lot of opinions on licenses, and I have published a lot of things regarding licenses. But this is your time to kind of educate me and educate everybody who happens to be tuning in, because I think it's important. There's, licenses for a lot of people are this nebulous thing that are in the air, and nobody has really laid it out that I have seen. Okay, this is the C license. You know, this is how many days it was. This was the structure of it all. These were my impressions. These are the pros. These are the cons. So hopefully we can do a deep dive. And I think that's what you wanted to talk about, right, Paul, or no?
Yeah. I mean, these are the things we can discuss, but that's probably the primary one.
Brilliant, man. So take it away. Maybe I can just frame things a little bit for you. You've been coaching for well over a decade, maybe even two decades. I don't want to age you at all.
Particularly
here in the United States, clearly you had to have gotten a coaching license. Otherwise, they don't let you set foot on the field, which is a matter that we can shoot opinions on. And, you know, at this point, with all this experience, you decided for one reason or another, maybe you can start there, to go ahead and pursue the C license and maybe potentially, you know, the B or the A at some point.
Yeah. I did the C license so that I can be a great coach and coach in MLS next. That's my entire goal.
Got it. Is that what they're requiring, by the way, or no?
I'm not even sure. I think MLS next might require a C.
Okay.
But yeah, certainly not my end goal. Yeah, look, I mean, partly it was through I'm having to do it because I think to go any further in the coaching ecosystem, you kind of have to. You just alluded to it there. You've got to go through the licensing system because it's a requirement almost to coach at certain levels of the game. And while I enjoy coaching youth soccer and I'm in it for now, if I want to go anywhere else and move up, I've almost got to do the licensing. And it's a ridiculous way of looking at it, but whatever institution or organization it is, if you go and talk to people or you want to go to an interview, immediately the thought goes before anything else, well, what license are you? Utter bollocks. But that's how, unfortunately, everything's set up. And so I feel like I've been forced into it. I've held off for 2 years. People keep saying, you've got to do the C, you've got to do the C. I don't want to do the C. I don't want to go and do it. Respectfully, it isn't going to help me. But I feel like I've been kind of pushed into it. And so I just bit the bullet and was like, I'm just going to do it. And while doing it, I can use it as an opportunity to explain to everybody what it actually looks like and give some transparency. So it was twofold, really, for myself and also perhaps in a blunt way to expose what it is.
Got it. Okay, so tell me, where was it located? Because sometimes people have to travel for these things. Was there a wait list? Did you try to get in earlier? Because that's another story I hear a lot of times, that people kind of have to apply to get into the courses themselves. And more often than not, I hear stories of people being rejected. Oh, no, it's all full. Sorry. Try again next time. And people have to wait 6 months or a year. And the next thing you know, 2 years have gone by and you're finally allowed in by some, I don't know, smoking men with, smoking cigars in a back room said, okay, fine, we'll let this guy take our license and bestow that grace upon you. So maybe start there, tell us where it was, and just dive in, Paul. Like, tell us about the course. You step into class, day one, what happens?
Yeah, good framing, good questions. In terms of getting on the course, I don't know that it's quite as strict as that, but there's definitely an element of if the numbers are already full or close to full, you're not getting in. I applied months ago and I couldn't get in. It was apparently full. I tried to do what most people do in all industries and make a couple of phone calls and see if there was any way I could get in through the back door. That didn't work. That way has worked for some people, and I know that, both for C and B and A licenses. But eventually I managed to get on it, and it was in Irvine. So actually not far from you, Gary. Well, where you are, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm in Lake Forest now, but like right next door. Is it at the Great Park or something?
Well, I'll just say where it was. Yeah, Santiago Canyon College.
Got it.
Yeah, great setting. And I will say this. Look, let me just preface this with first saying, before I'm fairly critical in a lot of this, like I mentioned in the article, two genuinely good guys running it that are also good football coaches and they know the game. So we're not talking about Muppets that don't know what's going on. And I came away with a lot of respect for both of them. And so a lot of this criticism will be probably pushed towards how the C license is formatted and how it runs rather than the personnel that were running it.
Got it. So that already tells me that whoever happens to be quote unquote teaching it really doesn't have a lot of liberties to teach the way they want to teach or teach the subject matter that they want to teach. It's the curriculum is established by somebody else or something else, and they have to follow it to the letter.
Yeah, look, my conversations kind of indicated to me that they were fairly constrained by what the parameters of the course were and how they could deliver it, and perhaps are not delighted in the way that that has to be done.
Okay, so day one, Paul, run us through it.
Day one, walk into an auditorium, classroom, sit down and listen to the instructors for half an hour or so, I guess, quantifying what they're about and what their knowledge and background is to kind of set the scene of this is what's going to happen over the next few days. This is why I'm experienced. This is how I'm going to be able to help you. Again, well explained by them, but from minute one until the end for me, it was just classroom, academics. That's not learning football for me. You got to be on the field, which is why my opening line of my article was good on paper, shit on grass.
Got it. So PowerPoint presentations, I presume?
Very much so. Very much that stuff. Yeah.
How many people were in the class, Paul?
There were two groups, two separate instructors, and I want to say 10-ish per group. So probably 20-odd in total. All good people. Had good experiences with all of them. Good people wanting to further themselves in coaching. But at the same time, again, respectfully to them, many of them, probably most of them, blissfully unaware of the ecosystem they're operating in and what the realities of it are.
Got it. And look, for the audience as well, when I call all this thing a Muppet show and Muppet this and Muppet that and respect here and disrespect there, everybody's a product of the environment. So you said you have the instructors, they're good guys. But since they have to follow the guidelines that are outlaid before them and they are basically just regurgitating what they're instructed to instruct, you're kind of a Muppet. You know what I mean?
Like, I get you.
And it's not to be insulting or anything. It's just that's what it is. And the folks in the audience, I'm curious as to your read on them. what was the distribution like? Were there very seasoned practitioners such as yourself? Were there very, very new coaches that have been only coaching under 5 years, young, old? What was that? What did that look like? And then maybe you can tell us a little bit about day one materials that were presented.
Yeah, good mix of ages, genders, and experience. Definitely a big spectrum in terms of, I don't know, maybe again, respectfully to the entire group, can count on one hand the number of coaches that I interacted with and were like, definitely know their craft, definitely know their craft. And then the rest of them were, I suppose, just trying to work through the licensing system. And it became more evident once we get on the field where most of them stood.
Isn't that interesting, right? Once you get on the field, you kind of see.
Yeah, and look, that should be the litmus test, no? Not whether you can sit in a classroom and do the bullshit on the board and all the other things and all the academic stuff. The game is on the grass. Like, that's where the game is played. That's where we coach it. Yeah, so that was just a big frustration for me.
Okay, tell me about their academics. What were on these PowerPoint slides? What did they have you actually do?
I should have taken some more screenshots and stuff and videos, really. I could have showed you. A lot of stuff that I refer to as busy work. I can't stand it. I'm very straightforward. We're doing ABC. This is why we're doing it. Let's work through it. Let's not go around the houses and talk a load of bullshit before we do it. It was just far too academic. It was a lot of talk about things that are on the board, get into groups, write some things down, and then we have a big discussion about it. Just utterly not my scene at all. And for me, not a good way to improve your craft on the field. Just not.
Do you remember any examples? Did they have you like in a group and did they present a scenario? Hey, imagine you have this sort of situation, you know, maybe you're running up against an opponent who's superior to you. What do you do? Or is it, this is the definition of play, practice, play, or whatever. This is the definition of a small-sided game. These are why small-sided games are good. Can you please structure a small-sided game for yourself? Can you create a lesson plan? I'm trying to give the audience here some degree of specifics, maybe, if you remember.
Yeah. I guess one thing to pull out was we'd watch some video clips of the US women's national team, and then we'd be asked for the number six or the number eight, tell us what they did well, what they could have done better, what their role is. But while doing that, open up all of the guidelines or the parameters set out by US soccer for what you should see from players in these positions and reference your answers directly to that. Kind of like being led in a way of, look, this is what we say these positions should be. These are the actions that we think you should be assessing. And so refer to this rather than look at the screen. Tell me what you see. Tell me in your voice and your experience as a coach. And again, I didn't like that. I don't want or need somebody else to tell me what I need to see on a screen.
Got it. So they had player profiles that they try to teach you guys about.
Key qualities, I think they're called. Key qualities of a player. And there might be 5 or 6 different boxes with the key qualities there of their attacking play, defensive play, transition play. Just very much, it's structured and robotic in a way that I can't stand.
Got it. And so then they had you watch some film and you're supposed to kind of analyze or assess the players in specific actions?
Yeah, in specific actions, and then talk about how that relates to those US soccer key qualities of a player.
And then do they try to link that to how you should train them, you know, to take corrective action or to improve those sorts of qualities?
Yeah, there was a very big emphasis on specificity and not approaching training sessions in a general way, but being really specific of how you train maybe a 4 and a 5 or the 6 and the 8 and how you isolate them in a training session to give those individual players specific instructions. Again, for me, it's too structured and it's too far away from the chaos and reality of what it looks and feels like on grass. A lot of my coaching is done through feel, because it's what you feel at the time on the field with the environment, with the characters, with the atmosphere, with the emotion. I just think that's a huge part of coaching. And this felt like it was much less about feel and more about pre-planning what your interventions are going to be before the session even starts. Something, again, I can't get on board with.
Do they give you, I have some opinions on that, but before I get there, do they have or did they show you specific activities, training activities or training drills that focus in on, you know, correcting or developing a particular profile?
Yes, and both instructors ran a full session for like 80 minutes and the coaches took part as the players and they ran the session. Both of them were good sessions. Both of them I enjoyed and I thought they flowed pretty well, but it was both set up in a way of warm-up. Activity one, activity two, bigger scrimmage. And most of the 4 or 5 days, whatever it was I was there, were following that process. And a few of them raised eyebrows. One of the instructors, I think, raised eyebrows when I said, I don't do this. I can't relate to it. When he asked me what I did, I just said, well, most of my sessions, I'll have two things that I'll work on for 45 minutes. And many sessions, I'll only work on one thing for the entire 90 minutes. And that's all I focus on. And people kind of look to me as if to say, oh, you're not following this process. No.
Mm, interesting. So it's a mixture of things that they have.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, because you're aware of the stuff that we've done, or the work that we've, how we've trained teams.
Yep.
It's very similar to what you just described that you kind of do. It's like, okay, you know what? Today's session, the boys need to understand or get a better handle on building out of the back because they haven't been executing it properly over the past few weekends. You know, they seem to have forgotten some things, or we got exposed or something like this. Let's do building out of the back. So the entire session out after the warm up, after those sorts of things, like, okay, you have exercises that specifically remind them and train them and enlighten them about how you build out of the back. Maybe it's with no pressure, then you add a little bit of pressure, then you add maximum pressure, and you start helping them out, right? See this stuff. But you're telling me that is a big no-no, or did they just kind of like look the other way when you say, hey, I follow this versus something else?
No, look, in the time we were there, we had to follow that process. And for the 20 minutes that I had on the field and my group, we did a section each. Warm-up activity one, activity two, scrimmage, whatever you call it, small-sided game, or expanded activity. We had to follow that. I just think there was eyebrows raised because of the way I framed how
but
I do.
But you're not scolded, are you? I mean, will you still pass the course if you ask these types of questions or kind of demonstrate some sort of resistance to the established curriculum?
Yeah, look, you're still passing. It's just like everything else that I'm sure you've experienced and I do every day. You stand out from the crowd and people look at you as if to say, you're the crazy one. When the reality is you're the one with eyes fully open, seeing everything for what it is.
What's the ratio, would you say, between classroom instruction in the C license and on-field activities and instruction?
If we include the two sessions that both instructors ran, and we include the sessions that everyone was involved in, we're on the field for maybe 7 or 8 hours total. But my massive gripe that I obviously wrote about in the article was that of that time we were on the field, my personal coaching time was 20 minutes exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in classroom instruction, how many hours was that, would you say?
Over the 4 days, it was a lot. 10 hours a day, I think, over the 4 days. One of the days was maybe the last one was 3 hours. So we're probably talking about, with breaks, I don't know, maybe 25 hours plus.
In the classroom?
Yeah.
Okay. So definitely that's the big piece of the puzzle versus being on the field.
That's the huge piece of it, right? And again, to reference the article, it's essentially 80 plus hours of coaching or work in total to pass the course. And of those 80 plus hours, a huge part of that is Zoom. Most of it's Zoom, probably 50 odd hours maybe on Zoom, and then the 20 odd in the classroom and a few hours on the field with 20 minutes of that being your coaching.
Holy crap, that's a lot of Zoom, man.
Far too much Zoom. And I'm in the middle of it. Hopefully nobody from US soccer steps up and goes, get Paul Spacey off this course. You're failing him. Because I've got 4 weeks left.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think everything will be okay. What do they do in Zoom?
Not much.
Okay.
I said after the first week of Zoom, nice guy, knows the game, English guy, very experienced. He's a professor as well, by the way. Yeah, very experienced, good at his craft, actually. But I said after the first week on social media, painful for me. Genuinely painful sitting there. Yeah.
Did they describe how they give out pass or fail grades? Like, what do you have to do? Is there a criteria? Or are you kind of flying blind? You just do the best you can and then just, I don't know, it's up to them what they do.
Yeah, you're passing anyway. And I think they may have explicitly referenced it at some point and explained the process that prior to COVID, there would be more of a pass-fail approach. After COVID, they talked about Zoom and how everything changed and it became about just doing the course to get the experience. And everyone passes. And look, I suppose that just follows where society's gone, right?
Yeah.
There's no accountability and no failure now because, Jesus, let's not fail anyone just in case they start crying.
Yeah, yeah. Are there exams?
No exams. Aside from writing a few practice plans and submitting those and presenting those and doing your 20 minutes on the field, there's nothing. It's a case of just being there and getting through it.
Do you have to do a practice plan with a specific application, with specific standards? What is that application if they do use an application?
Yeah, you have to film a couple of your sessions on the field with your team. Send in the film and then have the session structured again in the way that they want the session structured, not in the way that you want to do it. And so you follow that process of warm-up activity 1, 2, and then activity 3 or whatever it's called, the expanded one. That's basically it.
So you're not turning in like a paper, really?
No, not in that sense. There's a few things to submit during that period. A lot of it is about and around reflection and reflecting on yourself as a coach and writing down how some of these concepts you'll improve yourself as a coach. Again, bluntly, very much a load of bollocks that I can't stand.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier that I want to revisit. You said you coach a lot based on feeling, right? And I agree with that also. And also when you're doing sideline management during matches, it's all feel-based. I want to be careful, all feel-based. 90% plus, okay, feel-based. And what substitutions you make and what adjustments you make, a lot feel-based. But I think there is a coaching development arc that everybody goes through. And that is this. When you first start out as a coach, and I remember mine quite vividly, it's almost all feel-based because you don't know what the F you're doing. And so you kind of just like lean on what was done to you when you were a player.
Yep.
And you just kind of go with that memory and go based off of your feelings and you do the best that you can. And then you realize that that's not the best thing to do. And you start looking for structure. So you start doing some research, you start trying to quote unquote, educate yourself as best you can. And obviously you're not qualified to even educate yourself because you don't even know what is bullshit out there and what is good stuff out there, but you try. And so you start establishing a little bit of structure in your sessions, in the way that you run a team. And that structure, can last anywhere from a couple years to 20 plus years, and you never even leave the structure. And then there's a third phase for those who do end up leaving the structure. You go back to feel, because now you have so much experience, you know so much, you've tried so many of the different quote-unquote structured things out there. You know what works, you know what doesn't work, you know what buttons to push with players, you know what buttons not to push, you know how to maneuver yourself from a management perspective, everything. You don't have to sit with pen and paper or a PowerPoint presentation and outline everything and do this objective analysis of everything. No, that is done. You've already been through that. You get it. You're back to the feel side of the equation. And so I guess what I'm trying to get at, aside from it laying out a development arc that coaches go through, good coaches, in my opinion, is you go to these licensed courses as an experienced guy who's been through that narrative arc, and they're kind of bringing you back to step two of the development arc, which is, let me give you some structure. And you're like, bitch, I know all about this structure nonsense. You know, you're in a great position to judge the quality of the instruction, if I may say it that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. I think you summarized that perfectly. I don't know that I've thought about it in that exact way as that arc, but that is what really good coaches go through. You begin by not knowing what you're doing. You go through that trial and error phase, and you bring the structure in largely because when you research online or go through courses, that's what it tells you need to do. You need structure. You've got to have it in this PPP way or whatever it is. And then once you learn enough and understand it enough, and you've been on the grass enough, out of the classroom and on the grass enough, you understand and fit. Look, it's all about feel and connection with players. And if you get the connection part right with the players, you're 90% of the way there, and you're way ahead of most coaches, respectfully, who might be higher licensed, that are still absolutely locked into this structured way of coaching and following. I think I wrote a couple of things down. It's heavily about, I hear this all the time from B license and A license coaches, it's heavily about measurables, data. And I switch off immediately. It just turns me off. And I'm like, but what about the football? How are you connecting with the players? What are you feeling from your team? Oh, no. We just need to measure A, B, and C, and then we'll improve from that. And it drives me nuts, Gary.
Well, it also drives people who are trying to navigate the ecosystem, like as a parent of a youth player or as a media person or as a fan, because they don't get to go through this development arc themselves, right? They started out with feels, right? You don't know anything about the game as a fan or as a media guy or as a parent. It's all feeling based. Yeah. And then they graduate to structure. What do? They've educated themselves on statistics. What does XG mean? What does XA mean, right? What is possession all about? What do the standings look like? What is, all objective sort of facts. What does transfer market say about this player? You know, what is he worth? What is he not worth? What does this article say, that article? So all structure, objective. But they can't then graduate back to the feeling side. Yep. Because they're not actual practitioners anymore. So when they run up against somebody like yourself or like me or like, and I'm not comparing myself to Pep or Mourinho by any stretch, but you see the top managers in the world in press conferences, and what do they talk about? They don't give you objective, real, they don't sit down with objective facts and lay out their rationale and reasoning with objective facts. They kind of, without being explicit, and you can read them because we're practitioners, Paul, they kind of think your questions are really dumb, right? They're really dumb. Oh, why did you move Foden out here? That, and they're expecting you to give some objective analysis why Foden was moved out to the wing or moved into the central position. They want to hear, oh, because Liverpool was blah, blah, blah. No, it has nothing to do with that. It's like Pep felt in that moment, because his central nervous system is so wired into football, he felt, I need to move Foden over here. I need to do these sorts of things. Haaland's not working for this game. And you make the decision. Yeah. Feeling based.
Yeah. Completely feeling based. All the best coaches have that. You can watch the game on TV in any country and pick out the best coaches. They all have that. They're all passionate. They all have an unbelievable connection with their players. They all have that feel to know what to do in a certain moment, not because of measurables and data. And if the game was purely about objectivity, the geeks and the lab coats could have taken over. They could have taken over. Why haven't they? Because that's not it. That's not what the game's about.
Yeah, totally. I can hear somebody in the audience already, oh, well, Paul, don't you know that Liverpool has a sports science data analytics department and they've invested millions in data analytics? And yes, guys, we understand that. But the buck stops with the actual human being, the practitioner, who is like, okay, I see what your analytics say, go F yourself, right? I don't know if you've seen this, whether it's fact or fiction, because you can't believe what you read online these days. You can't believe the journalists, you can't believe the media, but I don't know if you've seen this with Materazzo, you know, obviously winning Copa del Rey against Atletico Madrid, the American-born coach over there, the first one ever. It's a whole other side topic that he's been in Europe 25 years. He's basically a European, okay? He's not, and he wasn't raised in the MLS system. He's not like the American that these guys want to claim kind of that he is. But there were some commentary that the sporting director, apparently he was asked, why'd you hire this guy? And the sporting director said, oh, well, you know, AI said that I shouldn't hire this guy. And then I just ignored, you know, the AI, because the AI said, by objective metrics said, you should not hire Materazzo, you know, and what's his name? Do I have the name right?
I think that's it. I honestly didn't know much about him until Sociedad won this title. I didn't know much about him, I'll be honest.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's true, if it's not true, but just another example of, you can have AI analyze all the data in the world. At the end of the day, it's the human being who's been working with the players, understands the feel of the game and what's required of them.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I've spent months now, I'm sure you have, working with AI, Claude, Grok, and all the others. And it's fantastic support to analyze data and do all of the analytic stuff. It's great for that. It's not great for feel. That's what we're for. That's what we're for. That's what the humans are for. It can't take over that. And so, yeah, this obviously there's from 2000 onwards a huge influx of staff into all clubs in the sports science departments and the data analytics and everything else. Does it have some value? Of course it does. Of course it has some value. Like, the outputs of it can be given to the coach or whoever needs them, and they ultimately make decisions. But I just think we as with everything, we fire ourselves too far along the spectrum and then start expecting everything to run by objectivity and data and analytics and forget the fact that the game is massively, massively about feeling and emotion.
Okay, but the courses don't tell you about feeling and emotion, the licenses.
Because they're hard, because it's hard to teach. And most of that feeling and emotion, as you've already alluded to, comes from trial and error and time on the grass. And going through that experience yourself. Like, you can't learn that feeling and emotion from classroom 162A at a college. You can't learn it there.
Yeah. If you allow me, go on a little rant now. And I want you to maybe try to identify some things that maybe you disagree with. And if not, that's fine too. I just see the whole soccer licensing thing.
We should have some disagreements here, Gary. I'll let you go on a rant, but we should. Because I spend a lot of time in disagreement with people online. So me and you should as well.
And it's really good to sharpen our arguments as well, or to change our minds.
Yeah.
The licensing thing, the first word that comes to mind is a scam, okay? But I don't want to call it a scam. I got a lot of pushback when, you know, Benny published a lot of reels that were little snippets of past episodes where I go off on the licensing. And let me start off by saying licenses are good when you have to vet people, because there's a public interest. There's a general safety issue or concern associated with the practice of a particular profession. If you want to be a doctor, you kind of have to pass a certain level of knowledge and understanding, and somebody has to vet you, okay, that you qualify and pass those standards, because people's lives are at risk. Similarly with lawyers, right? People's livelihoods are at risk. I can't go and defend somebody who's up for murder. It'd be completely irresponsible of me to do that if I don't pass certain qualifications. Same thing with construction. You want to go and build a home or something? Well, a home can fall on somebody's head. We have to understand these standards and vet people and give them a quote unquote license. You want to drive a vehicle? Okay. Somebody has to vet you at least a little bit, you know, to say, okay, you're competent enough, you're lucid enough to be able to operate this deadly machine out in public. But coaching soccer, Paul, this is the most ridiculous thing of all time, to say you have to have a license to do this. maybe what I could grant them is, fine, you want to do a license because maybe you're dealing with children or something like that. Put them through a licensing course on first aid, put them on a licensing course for, you know, harassment or how to deal with all of these sensitive sort of topics. Fine. But once you do that, you're done. Okay. You shouldn't have to go through another license and then another license and then another license and then another license to go and coach at different levels. It's the silliest thing on planet Earth. And here's what people push back, and they had an issue with me. It's like, oh, so you're against education? Like, this is the dumbest thing of all time. Guys, the license is not about education, first and foremost. It is a gatekeeping mechanism. If it were about education, then, hey, USSoccer, you have all the education available to you. Release it to the public. You know, people can learn at their own rate whenever they want. Why do you have to force coaches to pay? How much did you pay? You pay $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000, depending on the level of the license that you're at. So if you want to go through the whole licensing program, first, they have to admit you to the course, another gatekeeping mechanism. And then you have to fork out a shit ton of money that coaches don't really have, unless this is kind of like your side gig and not your day job. So licensing is, I want to put a revolver to my temple, you know, when people kind of protect the structure that exists.
You wanted me to argue with you.
Yes.
I'm finding it difficult from what you've just said to come up with a coherent argument against that.
Well, people, I'll help you out. People will say that, oh, well, Gary, you get to meet a lot of other people, you know, networking, and they do have valuable information. I don't know.
There's some truth in that. Right. I mean, I get to meet a lot of people in Whole Foods every day. They don't have valuable information for me, but there's some truth in that. And that feeds further into the gatekeeping. The truth in that is, if you establish relationships with certain people, coaches at certain levels or people within different sections of US soccer or the federation, can you have a conversation and perhaps get a favor and a door opened? Yeah, you can. Yes, you can. And I alluded to it at the start of the conversation. I know coaches that have got on to higher licensing courses because they knew somebody, not because they registered to go on the course and it was their time to go on it. One or two of them that I'm spoken to weren't even ready for that license yet because they weren't eligible. They had to do a certain license for a certain number of years before they can do the next one. But a quick conversation with someone, yes, sir, we'll get you on this. We'll get you on this. Yeah, so look, is it a scam? No. Is it gatekeeping? 100%. Is it a revenue driving thing? 100%. If you're going from zero to a license over X amount of years, you're talking about in excess of $10,000.
Yeah.
And that does the same thing as it does. We talk about the pay to play system, right? Cutting some kids out. This cuts some coaches out. It does. And if we're all about, oh my God, inclusivity. Everything's about being inclusive and including everyone and not upsetting everyone. All right, well, the licensing system by design excludes people financially.
Yeah, great point. Great point. I'll follow up on the education argument that people have. Oh, you're against education. They're teaching coaches how to coach better. You know, we need better coaches. I go back to the university system because it's something that people can relate to. You have a university system that offers bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, or doctorates. Let's stick with the bachelor's degree because a lot of people get a bachelor's degree. It doesn't mean that you're any good after you get your bachelor's degree. And to put it generously, look how long it takes to get a bachelor's degree. A kind of a minimum of 4 years. Most people take 6 years, okay? So you're in classrooms and you're religiously doing homework week in and week out for 4, 5, 6 years. You graduate, you get out, and you're utterly incompetent. You have no experience, you have no capabilities, you have no skills, and depending on how hard you work is where you fall on the curve of any kind of competence with the subject that you supposedly majored in. There's exceptional people, mediocre people, and it's like, really? You got a degree in that? You don't know anything about that. And so that's with 4 to 6 years of hardcore study, Paul. Yeah. Here we're talking about a soccer license that is 80 hours total, you know, a week's worth of work or 2 week or four, whatever length of time it is. So compare it, 5 years versus 5 weeks. This is not an education that we're affording coaches.
No, it's not. It's just a come and do this for a period and we'll help you be better. The reality is, does it help some coaches do a couple of things better? Maybe. I don't know, maybe. Has it changed me 1% so far doing this? No. Will it change the way I coach? Absolutely not. And I know that makes me sound like an arrogant prick. Like, I'm going on a course, I'm not going to learn anything. And other people have framed it online to me and said, whatever, Paul, you get out of it what you put in. So it's you. It's not the course, it's you. And that's okay. Like, you get out of it what you put in. That's fine. I'm not going to take a lot away from it because I don't see the value in it. You might, because for you, 1 + 1 = 2, and you're right at the start of your coaching journey. You might, but it's of no value to me. The university thing's ridiculous for a lot of people. I think that going doing 4 years of study for a lot of people is not the right thing, but I think socially we just accept it and go and do it.
Yeah.
There was a girl online, I think I saw the other day, she did a four-year course. It was in a month or 2 months or something, either using AI or a different method.
Yeah. Imagine you've been a practicing electrician or engineer or whatever, just name a profession, that you've been working out in the field forever. You have all this experience and they then force you to go to school for it. Because that's kind of similar with a lot of coaches. Like, I view your situation similar to that. You have all this ample experience, all the age groups, all the levels, decade plus worth of work every single day for years and years and years. And they're like, okay, go do this course, Paul. It's understandable that you're like, seriously?
Yeah, it should be understandable. I think a lot of people don't see it that way, but it is understandable. And a good example of that, again, he's a very good guy, the instructor, but it explicitly said to me, I loved watching your training, high energy. You created a fantastic atmosphere. You didn't do X, Y, and Z interventions. You didn't do the interventions in the way that they wanted me to do them. I think that's a good example of it.
Yeah. Here's the million-dollar question everybody wants to know. Did rondos come up in discussion?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. I thought about it earlier, but forgot to mention it. 2 or 3 times, and the way it was brought up, for me, the way I felt it, going back to feeling, I felt that it was an insecurity, and that's why it was brought up. It was a way to address the fact that everyone talks about rondos not being part of US soccer's approach, and one of the instructors said, well, it's okay, you know, we're not saying you can't do rondos. But I think then in the next breath, a bunch of coaches talked about, well, it has to be directional. Surely it has to be directional, and do we have to have goals in it? And we kind of, yeah, we got back to that again of it should be done in a certain way. And then one of the instructors asked, is this a rondo? I can't remember what exercise it was, but I looked and I was like, yeah, it is a rondo. And a bunch of people said, no, that's a possession, something activation, this, something else. So
Got it. Okay, so it wasn't outright like banned, but it's kind of, There's something weird going on with U.S. soccer and rondos. It's very strange.
Yeah, it wouldn't be part of their approach to do the 4v4 + 3 or whatever it is, a 4v1, a 4v0. I don't think that'd be part of the approach. Now that said, I will say one of the instructor's first exercises was a 4v2, and teaching the two how to cover each other and try and cut off the passing lanes. And that was actually quite a good exercise. So, yeah.
Good. You know, it's also kind of strange. You mentioned the instructors are English, and I like throwing jabs at you guys. You know,
this you do.
Well.
And it's
all in good fun. So here's a curiosity for me. You've had Pep in the Premier League for like, what is it, 9 years now or something like this?
Yeah.
Done exceptionally well. People will say, oh, because he has unlimited budget, whatever. And then you also have Mikel Arteta at Arsenal, and you have like all these coaches. And guess what they do in their training? A lot of rondos as well. They brought that from Spain. They do the rondos. They're highly successful there in the English environment. So I would think, you know, that your instructors would be a little bit, I don't want to put words in your mouth or anything, but you would think they'd be more open or more welcoming or more like, hey, wink, wink. Yeah, U.S. Soccer doesn't really like it, but you know what? Yeah, you do your rondos.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think so. I just got the feeling that both from the course and from talking to some of the A-license coaches that have done the B and the A, it's just very much about the specificity of positions and extracting moments from the game, whether it be the right centre-back, the right back, the six, and the combination of the seven out wide. How do we set up moments in practice just to work on those areas specifically? And again, I just think it's less holistic and less feel-based and more robotic in the sense of this is how it's done. We follow this, this, and this, and this is what should happen in the exercise, and this is what we're going to do to intervene, and we're going to plan all of that before it starts.
It's interesting that you brought up the word robot and robotic, because it also seems that there's this narrative coming kind of from the periphery of U.S. soccer and MLS that let the game be the best teacher sort of stuff. Did that ever come up?
I'm trying to think if that was mentioned about letting the game be the teacher. I can't really recall in the course.
Remember there was all this narrative also about guided discovery. That was a craze. Like between 5 and 10 years ago, that was a buzzword that everybody was using.
Yeah, that was definitely mentioned quite a bit, both by the instructors and many of the coaches during their sessions. We need to make sure we get guided discovery questions in. And I just look at it and go, piss off. I don't want to do guided discovery. I want to just go direct to the player or players and say, why did you do this? Let's do this. Go. Here's your solution. And I know it's let the players find out the solution for themselves. Again, piss off. They can find out some solutions for themselves while it's going on, but I don't want to have a classroom session for 10 minutes to talk about therapy so they can get to the point where they understand what's going on.
Yeah. Therapy.
Oh my God.
No, that's perfect, man. Oh, it's the bad kind of touchy-feely that they advocate.
Yes, it is. And my touchy-feely is walking over to a player, grabbing him by the shoulders, giving him a hug, and saying to him from 6 inches away, this is what you need to do, and this is why. Go and give it a try and see how it works. And you feel it from the players. They look at you and go, Jesus, that coach has just come and grabbed me, and we've had an interaction, and he's told me what to do. And you know they haven't been treated in that way before. They're stood 6 feet away from a coach who says, stand there and regurgitate to me what you should be doing, and I'll guide you through it, and there's no connection at all.
Did they mention anything about age-appropriate or level-appropriate exercises or training, or was it very generic?
It was fairly generic. I think there was some age-appropriate stuff, but again, I can't recall. Admittedly, I enjoyed the interactions with people. For most of it, I sat there trying to look interested, but I wasn't.
Were there coaches from out of state?
Yes. Yeah. There were a few that had flown in. There was a kid from Hawaii, actually.
Oh, holy cow.
Yeah.
Gosh, I feel like I'm running out of thoughts here. I think we've touched on the main points, you know, opinions of what licenses are, what they are not, what is good about them, what I think or we think is not good about them. What are we missing?
I'm not sure. I guess a lot of people would say, well, you and Gary, then in this episode, Paul, give us the solutions. Tell us what U.S. soccer should do. Tell us what we should be doing as coaches, because I complain a lot. I know you do the same, but it's not complaining. What I see it as is accountability and transparency. We're highlighting issues that exist and asking for accountability with it, rather than just burying our head in the sand and going, well, this is how the system is. We just let it happen. No one gets anywhere by doing that.
Yeah. Solutions. Well, things, I think what's important to recognize is we have to look beyond soccer. Everybody's so focused on soccer. Look at general workings of human civilization and, you know, and gain that wisdom and then incorporate it into the sub ecosystem that happens to be soccer. Open ecosystems work. Okay. An open ecosystem allows for a meritocracy to blossom and exist. Meaning, you get rewarded for good work, you get punished for bad work. What is good work? You know, what is indicative of good work? The win-loss column obviously is one factor, and that is coupled with development of players and development of teams and development of coaches and development of scouting departments and development of recruiting departments and development of business organizations that are operating the soccer stuff. It's all correlated with excellence in all of those professions, because that needs to happen in order for you to be better than your rival clubs, the other businesses, to win and be, you know, move your way up. Yeah. And so if you have an open ecosystem, coaches will naturally be incentivized to find solutions, to make the best training plans that they can, to find the best activities that they can for their philosophy, for their vision of play. So, Paul, you might be a possession-based coach. You believe in that sort of way of playing. And I might be the type of possession is dumb, you know, it has no purpose, you know, we need to go direct, route one. That's how I view soccer. So you have a philosophy and an idea, and I do as well. We just go at it and see who reigns supreme, right? And everything that goes along with it. When you have a closed ecosystem, that incentive is taken away from all the professionals in soccer. The coaches are now not really organically incentivized to be the best that they can be. What are they incentivized to do? To follow somebody else's instruction and rules and guidelines and rails. Because if they do that, then the powers that be, which created those things, will be like, ah, Mark Sanchez over there, he follows the rules. He does what we tell him to do. He does play practice play. He doesn't do the Rondo crap that the Spaniards do. We like Mark Sanchez. Let's bring him into MLS next or whatever, US soccer. Let's give him a youth national team gig, so on and so forth. So the incentives in the system when they're closed is to obey the gatekeepers.
Yep.
That is, and what are the chances that the gatekeepers have the magic wand, have the actual best solution of all solutions? Close to zero.
Yep.
So we need a competition of ideas. That is the solution. And people, I mean, guys, you always say, Gary, you complain. First off, I'm not complaining. I'm laying out the problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't know what the problems actually are, how can you even talk about solutions? So first you have to lay out the problem. And now I'm telling you what the solution is. The system needs to be opened up. And if you say, oh, MLS invested hundreds of millions of dollars, they'll never do it. Fine. How about advocating for opening it up at the youth level then?
And that would be a smaller step, right? There's two massive things in this country that might have the biggest impact. Number one is right at the top, and it's taken me this years to learn, and you've talked about it many times, the open ecosystem. That's the number one, right at the top above everything else. It would drive all the things that you just mentioned. At the bottom is the Tom Beyer early engagement part. More players, more families being educated and having that early engagement. Those two things I've talked about on social media at length, if those two things at the top and the bottom were combined, it would organically be utterly transformational for this country. Transformational in that it wouldn't even be a maybe question. It would be a guarantee that over a period of perhaps a decade, maybe a little bit more, this country would be a powerhouse within soccer. That's a guarantee. And then within that, right, we can still discuss smaller things that maybe we can do right now. And one of those things is the youth ecosystem, to make that transparently a meritocracy rather than what it is now, which is complete gatekeepers. And so there's a lot of people within the system, obviously, right? If you're a coach in that MLS Next system, or if you're one of the decision makers there, you want to, I understand it, you want to protect your position. You don't want to open up into a meritocracy because you're insecure about what your actual abilities are. And I think deep down, you know that you might be exposed. And so the people holding those levers of power, they're like, well, I don't want to open this gate. Why would I? I might lose something. And that's kind of how the ecosystem operates.
Yeah. On the Tom Beyer thing, I'm glad you brought that up because I do see you advocating for early engagement. I agree with that wholeheartedly. The earlier you start, the better of a development curve you're going to have as a child, you cannot catch up to somebody who started early. You just can't catch up. It, all things being equal, right? The genetics being quote unquote roughly equal between two players. One player starts at age 4, the other player starts at age 10. You're done. Age 10 guy, you're never catching up to the other guy. It's over. Your technical debt, as I call it, is over.
I think you coined that quite a while back, technical debt, and I've referenced it many times. That thing that you just mentioned, it should be basic logic and common sense, right? You cannot catch up those hours, but we see it online. People go mental. Mental. What? My 10-year-old's not going to catch up that 4-year-old? No, I've seen it happen. I've seen it with little Johnny. You might have done, because the 4-year-old stopped trying or stopped doing that many hours when they were 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever it is, and then your kid overtook them. But everything else being equal, like you've just said, that it's over.
Yeah, it's completely over. From a technical perspective and from a soccer IQ perspective, now, one player could have a better mentality than the other. And then at the higher levels, obviously the kid with the better mental fortitude, you can make a difference in that arena. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about technique more than anything else. The one thing I would push back on a little bit with the Tom Beyer argument, mm-hmm. and maybe he's mentioned this, maybe you've mentioned it as well, so apologies there, is that in the United States, we do have a huge population of kids and players who have had that early engagement. We have a large population who's had it. And usually it's from the immigrant, you know, households or the first generation. It's just, it doesn't make it through the pipeline, right? They're very good, early engagement, early development, everything looks great. If you had if you transplant that very same player into Spain, Holland, Portugal, wherever it is, they would blossom into something special, spectacular. But here, the ecosystem is so toxic that even if you had the early engagement, you get ruined by the time you come out the other side as a 17, 18-year-old.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, actually, and a great pushback on it. That bottom part of the early engagement needs to be supported and fed by the top part, which is a completely open meritocracy, so that everybody coming in has an equal chance to succeed. Again, so many people talk about inclusivity and everyone getting equal opportunities. It just doesn't apply to soccer. That's okay, but it just doesn't apply to soccer.
You know, can you expand a little bit on that? Because I've seen you talk about this a lot. You know, why is soccer different? Maybe you can just rant on that a bit versus the other sports.
Yeah, why is soccer different from the other sports, particularly the American sports? Well, the obvious one is it's foot dominant, not hand dominant. And so the learning process in terms of becoming exceptionally skilled with your feet and how that links to your brain is completely different. We use our hands every day, all day. And so picking up a baseball when you're 10 or 12 and going through that process is, I know people get annoyed about it, it's easier. Or maybe I should frame it differently. Soccer is just more difficult than the other sports to be great at because of the learning process and because everything is done with your feet. It's just more difficult to be great than it is to be great at another sport. Yes, you've got to be unbelievable at your craft to be a top basketballer. But a big part of it is purely based on your height. Like if you're 6'8" or 7 feet, I don't know, whatever it is, the number, it's something like your chances go from 5-10% to 50% chance of playing in the NBA if you're a certain height. So that it's largely driven by genetics. Football, again, is a game of it's a game of intelligence and artists expressing themselves in a fluid environment that's constantly changing and doesn't stop every 4 to 6 seconds like the NFL to start again and run your plays. It's just a really, really different sport. And I think I'll probably get pushback on this. I'm a soccer guy. It's all I know. It's what I love. I hesitate to use the word better sport. For me, it is a better sport. It's the best sport in the world. It's the most passionate sport in the world. It's got the most fans in the world. It's the most popular by a billion miles in the world, not just here. It's the most difficult sport. It's the most difficult sport as well to learn. And it has the most global competition. And again, yeah, I think there's a lot of insecurity that plays into that, right? If I'm a basketball NFL guy or somebody in those positions of power, I don't necessarily want soccer getting the foothold in this country that it's got everywhere else, because potentially it will take over.
Interesting. And I'm glad you brought up the global nature of soccer versus the other sports as well, because in the other sports, you don't get exposed as to whether you actually are the best in the world or not the best in the world, because you're the only ones playing the sport in the world, generally, relatively speaking, to soccer. And that's what brings a lot of the flaws of the system to light, is because you have to go and compete, club and national teams alike, with the rest of the world. And it turns out that we suck, right? You don't have NFL teams going to have to play the rest of the world. You don't have a national team for gridiron football that has to go and play against other global national teams. So for all you know, these are the best players in the world, because it's by default. And if you start looking into the other sports like basketball, systematically, they're getting a little bit more exposed over the time, because it has become a little bit more global in nature. And there are more basketball professional leagues elsewhere in the world that are matriculating and getting better financed and getting more popular. And lo and behold, the NBA is now flooded with foreigners instead of the local folks. And according to Kobe, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have his exact quotes, because Kobe was raised in Italy for a large period of time, and he has a lot of that sort of influence and background. He speaks Italian. He speaks a little bit of Spanish. He understands. He even said, yeah, the Europeans, in particular, the South Americans, like Argentina, have been learning basketball since they were little kids in the fundamentals. And here we've just been, you know, playing on blacktops, pickup basketball the whole time. They're actually better than we are. You know, we've just had this benefit of being, you know, so.
But this goes back to England, right?
Yeah.
We invented the game, so we were the best at it because of that. Mm. Over a period of time, everyone caught up and went past us. And we became no longer the best. And we've been fighting for decades to get somewhere back to being the best. And we've had to look in the mirror and take a good long look at ourselves and go, this approach that we've had, and us as a nation and the way we play football, might not be the best way to do it. So we might have to adopt some of these other things that other countries have done in terms of their technical approach to improve what we're doing here. And the Premier League, through the, can't think what the letters are that for it, but they adopted something 10, 15 years ago that was a much more highly technical approach to training, and it has really transformed the players that we've developed in England.
Yeah, what's your prediction for the summer?
I'm not sure. There's still a huge part of me, Gary, that I've still got that saved draft in my ex tweets. I'm waiting to post it. There's a huge part of me, I think I said on the last one, it came home. I'm waiting to post it. I would love to post it more than anything, but I don't see past three teams: France, Spain, Argentina. I don't see past those three for who wins it. France has the biggest depth by far. Spain probably has the most quality. Argentina has the best mentality by far.
Interesting. So those are your three prime candidates.
Yeah.
Well, can England get to the final?
I think we'd need two things. One, the coach to do a great job of picking the right players for each game. Three things, actually. Two, those players to play absolutely at their level. Three, some things to probably go our way in terms of the other teams maybe not playing to their top level.
Got you. Who would you fear most encountering in the knockout stages? You think it's just those three candidates that you mentioned, or is there somebody else?
No, I wouldn't want to play those three, followed by probably Brazil and Portugal.
Okay. Yeah, Portugal, man, dude, I don't know. If they win, let's just shut it all down, because that lame ass debate's going to rage on for the rest of my life.
About what? Messi, Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Portugal aren't going to win. They're not going to win it.
There's no way, huh? There's no way.
They're not going to win it.
They have good players, but I don't know.
Very good players, but there's something special, right? There's that X factor. There's the X factor in terms of how the players come together and how it all works as a collective. That's where Argentina have the advantage over everybody.
That's true. They do fight for each other for sure. And they have that mentality, and they don't care about anything other than the national team. They really don't. They don't care about their clubs. They don't care about anything. It's all about the national team. Yeah, I don't think you can say the same for England even, right? I'm sure they have pride, but it's kind of, I don't know. I can kind of see the players being like, they want to win, but there's a little chip in the back of their head, just a little bit, where it's like, if we don't win, I it's fine.
Yeah, there's definitely that. That's been there for decades, right? It's been obvious at some points. The Man United-Liverpool thing, I think in the 90s and 2000s, they all talked about it. It was openly discussed. Like, we don't like each other. We don't like each other when we sit at separate tables. So what chance has that collective got of winning anything? Zero. Zero. Gareth Southgate, for all his criticism, did a great job of bringing the squad together for England. Did a really great job. His downfall was he was too kind of pragmatic and defensive. He wasn't prepared to go for it. We lost in the first Euros to Italy, one of the worst Italian teams I've seen. We managed to lose to them. We then lost to a decent, but for me, not great Spain team in the next Euros. Again, through not having the balls to just go, let's go for it. Let's go for it.
Got you. Let's end with this, Paul. I've seen a change in your social media content that you've been posting. Maybe it started around, I don't know, 3 to 6 months ago, a lot more short videos of highlighting very specific things.
Yeah.
You know, what led you in that direction? And then maybe you can just tell everybody where they can find more of you.
Yeah. The X algorithm led me partly in that direction when I realized that posting videos gives you a 10 times boost. They change the algorithm every few months. And so you have to adjust the way you approach. And obviously being on X, disseminating information and trying to help people and having discussions is great. But you also want that exposure. You want to get impressions for what you're doing, right? You want to be successful on there. Otherwise, what's the point? So in a way, you have to structure the way you do things to take advantage of the algorithm while getting your information out. But having the videos, people love it because it stops them. Like, someone scrolling and they look and go, oh, there's a good video, I'll watch that. And then they actually read your message. And your message might have great information, but without them stopping that scroll in the first place, they don't see it. So that's a big part of it. And it got me a lot more interactions, a lot more feedback, a lot more criticism, which I welcome and love. Unless people are hammering you and battering you every day, how are you meant to get any better?
Got it. And so what is your X handle and maybe your YouTube channel or anything, any other resources?
Yeah, I think some of them are different, but my X one now, I managed to get a new handle. It's simple, at Paul Spacey. So easy. And most of my social media time is spent on there. So that's the best place to find me. Instagram is Paul JG Spacey and YouTube is Paul J Spacey. But most of my time is on X.
Really? I'll put it in the show notes.
My website is pauljspacey.com.
Okay. I'll put it in the show notes and I'll have a little handle popping up on the video as well. Anything we missed?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think so. We've covered everything. Is there anything or anyone else we need to criticize or hammer before we finish?
Well, there's always people to criticize and hammer and obviously, but maybe we'll save it for another time, or unless you want to talk about your compatriot here, kind of in Matt Crocker, you know, leaving the sporting director here in the States.
What a strange situation.
Yeah.
And what a bizarre thing to do. 2 months before it starts, or a month and a half, whatever it is, before it starts. Obviously, completely unplanned. Something's happened there behind the scenes that's made that happen. And I assume part of that, I heard he's gone to Saudi Arabia. Is that true? If that's where he's gone, money, obviously, was a driving factor. But I don't know. Something's happened there within US soccer and the federation, because I listened to him only weeks ago again on podcasts and stuff, and he's talking about the future and developing this and helping youth soccer be this and the national team that. It's come out of the blue. What are your thoughts on seeing it?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no visibility. And usually people in those circles And they trust me because I never reveal anything to anybody, not even my closest friends and family. Nobody knows dick when they tell me things in confidence. I haven't heard a peep. Nobody has told me anything as to what went down there. So it is kind of strange. What's annoying is that once more, nobody has any sort of accountability. And obviously, the bureaucrats and the politicians like Cindy Parlow Cohn and JT Patson, you know, the president and CEO of US Soccer, and then obviously all the MLS Muppets that control US Soccer, they all have the perfect scapegoat now for everything. It's like, oh, look, the sporting director just up and left, you know, and they don't even have to say it. The fan base here in our country, the media themselves do the job for the bureaucrats by scapegoating the guy. You know, so everybody gets away scot-free. Obviously, it opens up the position for an MLS lapdog to come in next.
Do you think
not that I even believe that the sporting director role is like a real role with real power. I think whatever comes out of the sporting director decision-making is a consensus-based thing, right, with the powers that be. It's not like the sporting director goes and has ultimate power, even though on paper, they're supposed to have ultimate power on the sporting side.
No, it's obvious. It's obvious when you listen to him talk, when he came in, he knows his stuff. He's been successful in England. He's very good at what he does, right? He wasn't going to come in and rip things up and lift the boardroom table and fix everything in US soccer or put the mirror in front of everyone and go, this is shit. Let's work on fixing it. You can tell by the character and the way he speaks, and you can tell this about most people when you have interaction with them, right? What kind of person they are and whether they're the kind of person that will upset the apple cart and tell people the absolute truth because they want to fix things. And the reality is that isn't many people, actually. It's not many people. Not many people are willing to do it. And certainly US Soccer as a federation wouldn't have hired Matt Crocker if there was any sense that he was going to come in and attempt to do that.
Yeah, so I see the position as a lame duck position. And then obviously Pochettino will be gone. They'll just hire some other dude. This is what's very curious. Everything that they do here in this country operates based on perception. So if we do exceptionally well at the World Cup, the US MLS / US Soccer will take all the credit. Oh, you see, we hired the right guy. Everything is working as we planned. We have to continue the things the way that they are. Look how well we've done. We're on the right path. If Pochettino sucks ass, or rather I should say the U.S. men's national team sucks ass, guess what? The narrative that'll come out of there is like, see, you guys wanted the big bad foreigner. We got you the big bad foreigner that's worth all this money. And look what happened. Shut the F up. Let the experts deal with this. Yep. And then they go off and hire their American MLS lapdog. And then if Pochettino does, I know I've said this before, I know you've heard this before, so apologies. And if we land right smack in the middle between failure and success at the World Cup, which in my estimation is the quarterfinals, it's kind of like a neutral landing zone, then the powers that be can just assess the situation, take their sweet ass time, and come up with a narrative and propaganda to get what they ultimately want, which is an MLS lapdog.
Yeah,
that's what's going to happen.
That is what's going to happen. And I think the only way to maybe get some public pressure behind some change, I don't know what that looks like, but some change is for complete disaster in the knockout round and to get grouped. And then most of it is put on Pochettino anyway. Most of it will be aimed at him, and obviously he'll get fired or he'll step down. And like you said, it'll be an MLS guy or whatever comes in next. But yeah, the only way, I don't want the US to, I don't want them to fail. I'm a citizen here now. So I'm English. I'll always be English, but I'm a US citizen. And so I'm going to live here. I'm not moving back to Europe. I'm going to stay here. I love being here. And as much as I'm sure you feel like this, as much as I criticize the system, the federation and everything else, it comes from a place of being desperate for this country to do well. I want the country to succeed.
Yeah.
So when I'm a dick or people call me a prick and bunch of people have said, go home, look at you with your English accent, you English prick, go home. I'm here because I want football to be better here. That's what drives me.
Yeah. We care too much and they don't want people who care too much, Paul.
Yeah, I think that's it actually. Yeah.
All right, brother. We'll end it there. Thank you again for coming on. I think you have a podcast of your own, don't you? Or you started doing some stuff?
I was doing it regularly. I need to get back to doing it regularly and start having some guests on. Yeah, I enjoy doing it. I need to get back to it.
Okay, man. Well, if you ever need me for anything, I'm here.
I appreciate you, Gary.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, mate.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.